Beaming out across the galaxy, this is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. I'm so glad that you are all here exploring life with us because it is a strange one and things are going to get chaotic, folks. I have no doubts about this. From my early projection from the idea of Bill Clinton being taken down, W being forced into office, Obama not having a birth certificate, to the concept that this election is going to fall to pieces. Now, I'm going to admit something here. I actually get a little hurt when I see these articles coming about of, say, Taylor Swift being a clone and now Hillary having a clone. And what really kind of hurts my heart, folks, is that I've never seen anyone write even a debunking article about Obama being a clone. And yet, through my Twitter feed, which you can follow there on Freeman TV, and through all my other feeds, I'm getting constant reports about, you know, Taylor Swift, a clone of the Satanist, was Zina LaVey, right? And then into this idea of Hillary being poisoned by Putin. Now, we are looking at a situation here as I've been following the social engineering of this structure as it is designed to crumble, is designed to fall apart in our minds first. And that's what we are going to discuss today. And as you see this thing unfold, then you start to realize that you may not be paying attention to the right things. So yes, they are reporting in the Washington Post that Hillary may have been poisoned by Putin. and this, the fact that she collapsed on 9/11 in front of everyone and all the cameras, and then was suddenly, let's just mention that she happens to be on the cover of Women's Health this month, but then the reports of her death were greatly exaggerated as Disney's ABC News quickly misreported that they were going to talk about Hillary's death. The reporters at InfoWars had gone in and phoned in to ask how this could happen, how ABC could possibly report that they were going to talk about Hillary's death. And they said, oh, it just must have been a problem in the prompter or something. I don't know. I wasn't there. And so you're left with this. And we're going to start to dig into these ideas and understandings of the social engineering campaign that is the New World Order and bringing us into this globalist nightmare with James Perloff. Now, he is the author of The Shadows of Power, and this is an expose into the private influences of American foreign policy. He's sold over 100,000 copies. If you haven't tuned in before, we had James on before with Lucifer's Council on Foreign Relations. And I guarantee you, even after this show, you're going to want to go right back and catch that one. He has been writing for the New American Magazine. He has written books against Darwin's theories of evolution. And his current book coming out now is Truth is a Lonely Warrior: Unmasking the Forces Behind Global Destruction. And that's really where we're going to look today. And don't miss his documentary as well, Shadow Ring, which he worked on the script for Free Your Mind or Free Mind Films. I always want to throw the "your" in there because you guys got to go to Free Your Mind. It's an epic adventure. I actually was on my way to Free Your Mind the last time James and I spoke. So James, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Freeman. Actually, we were talking off air, and I almost wanted to interview you for this show because you're telling me so many fascinating things.
It is a crazy time to be alive, James. Do you feel like you're right at the heart of this problem? Like you're standing in the crossroads with everything coming just colliding towards you? I think most people feel that way.
Crossroads or crosshairs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh, well, so I knew I had to get into this idea of Hillary's collapse on 9/11 and then her mistaken report of her death on ABC And the idea is that this whole system that we have, I mean, first of all, my God, we have no choice in this election. It's insanity versus psychopathy. It's you know, you can't win in this election, and it boggles my mind how people can even stand behind either one of these opponents as if they were some sports team and they were your home team or something, and it doesn't matter who they really are. What are your thoughts? Because I personally believe that there is going to be an epic meltdown at some point in this election system, in this process. What are your thoughts on all these ideas that Hillary has Parkinson? You see her with I hate to, you know, make light of it, but her bobblehead interview, you can see the weird emotional reaction she's having, her giggling fits, her coughing, her supposed pneumonia. And then when she comes forward after the pneumonia fit, we see this woman on camera that to me looks like Hillary's double. And in my opinion, you know, any great dictator will have these doubles, and Hillary certainly would fit that bill. What do you say?
Well, I think that there is a fairly good chance that the woman emerged, I guess, from Chelsea's apartment, looking fit and energetic, but wearing sunglasses. Might have been a stand-in for Hillary. Doesn't mean a permanent stand-in, but maybe somebody just to cover up the fact that she was having a serious issue that day.
To be clear, we're not talking about clones here, folks. This is a double like Saddam Hussein would have, like any of the dictators. I just wanted to make that clear, since we did open some ideas of cloning. We're not talking about this being a clone. We're talking about doubles, as any dictator would have. Okay.
Well, just like in the movies, they have stand-ins to do, you know, the rough bits, you know. And so when, you know, Mel Gibson is supposed to be falling down the side of a hill or taking a punch, you know, it's a stand-in at that moment is wearing a costume. And that's true for almost all the actors. I didn't mean to pick on Mel Gibson. For Hillary, there's certainly been more to her health issues than they've been letting on. I mean, they said it's pneumonia, but she's been coughing, I think, since last year. A lot of people thought that the coughs were to give her time to think of an answer to a question, but it does seem to be more of a problem. And as far as the collapse goes, that was nothing new either. Pictures have been taken before of her being assisted up the stairs by a couple of helpers, and they said, oh, she just stumbled, you know, maybe hurt her ankle, the media was covering for it, but now we see that it is an ongoing issue. Plus this whole issue with her eyes, not, you know, one eye goes in one direction and the other eye is focused in another direction, and that's certainly not pneumonia. There's something neurological there or something drug related, and of course people even talked about demonic possession, or is it just that all her corruptness and lies and living life of a total murderous skank for so many decades has finally caught up to her, because that stuff does take a toll on your health after a while, your physical health. It's hard to hold up when you're constantly committed to doing evil. And I'm sure you saw the picture of this strange hole in her mouth, which I suppose on her tongue, which I guess could just be a lesion, but it seems awfully large. And there was even, you know, half serious joking about the fact that reptiles have some sort of a hole in their tongue. And I don't go into the whole reptile thing that some do about our leaders, that they're shape-shifting reptilians, something like that. But enough health issues to suggest that, as you say, there could be a meltdown. As we are recording this show, the first debate has not taken place yet. But given Hillary's health issues, I don't know how she hold up in a debate, even if they give her an earpiece hidden under her hair. I don't know if she was to melt down, how that would play out. And I do believe she is the choice. I do realize that they back both parties, but Hillary's commitments are 100% in accordance with the New World Order agenda. I do believe that when this election campaign started out, the choices they wanted were Jeb and Hillary. And one evidence for that, of course, is that far more Wall Street money was poured into their two campaigns than any of the other candidates in the initial horse race. Of course, Jeb dropped out because his personality was so flat that nothing could be done to fix it. They started calling him the Edsel of the election, or the of the Bush family. So he had to drop out. And that left it to Hillary. And if you look at her platform and her commitment, she's pro-war on terror. She's pro-Israel. She's pro-gun control. She's pro-GMO. She's pro-population control, which encompasses a lot of things, including abortions and forced vaccines. She's pro-controlling the population on the environmental climate change pretext. She's come out in favor of internet censorship. She's pro the whole transgender thing. And she called the TPP the gold standard of trade agreements. Now, Trump is in favor of a lot of the things she's in favor of. He doesn't talk about civil liberties any more than she does, but he has made a commitment to halt this immigration, massive immigration flow, which is turning Europe into chaos, in which they want to do the same thing in America with George Soros backing. And even though he supported gun control in the past, he's come out as the Second Amendment advocate in this race, and it'd be kind of hard for him to go back on that. So I don't think they do want Trump. I think Hillary's the choice, and one indicator of that is George Bush Sr. just within the last couple of days came out saying he's going to vote for Hillary. And I think this is the first time that I can remember a U.S. president saying he would vote against his own party. I may be wrong on that, but I don't remember that happening before. So it sounds like a last desperate gasp, but I just don't see, Freeman, how she's going to hold up in a debate with this decline in her health.
Yeah, when we look at this puzzle, and if it is Parkinson's or even any neurological effect here, then when she's put under this type of stress, I mean, she hasn't done any debates or any campaign.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, yeah, put under this type of stress. I mean, we might have to do a follow-up show, James, after she has gone through this debate and see if there was a meltdown. Because is it tonight?
It's soon. I'm not sure if it's tonight.
It's either tonight or tomorrow. Sorry, we're recording this one early, folks, so that we can get into all of this. Well, okay, so, you know, yeah, I mean, with Bill Clinton's history, geez, we could be talking about syphilis. Who knows what's wrong with Hillary and her tongue? I don't know. But, of course, there's been many a crazy dictator that has served with syphilis, and, boy, that's never a good idea. What happens, though, folks, as we start to look at this occult? If we put our occult goggles on and we start to look at this puzzle, and we see that if Hillary does fall, we have this man, Tim Kaine, coming into the picture. And there were already reports coming out of Tim Kaine, or at least his speaker, spokesperson, saying, well, he is ready to take office if something were to happen with Hillary. And I guess my real point here is, James, that none of us know anything about this guy, Tim Kaine. Boy, I wish I'd known more about Dick Cheney back in the day.
Right, and I have to admit that I have not studied Tim Kaine. My attention really has been joining with other people in alt media in sort of a never Hillary effort to make sure that she does not get elected, because I think she is so corrupt, so immoral, so lacking in compassion, and so pro-war, so pro-Wall Street. I just can't imagine anybody worse than Hillary for the United States and the world at large. So my attention has been on her, and I have neglected Tim Kaine. And you're quite right, if health issues take her down, and I don't see, even if she gets through the debates, and we'll see how she does, but even if she gets through the debates, I don't see how she'd survive a full term as president with what looks to be rapidly deteriorating health, in which case Kaine would be the replacement. And so it does become actually quite essential that we know more about Kaine. And that's probably something that we in alt media should start doing more, is studying this man's background and seeing what type of a future we would have if he were to come president. Although I suppose a question we should also ask, Freeman, is, if Hillary dropped out of the race, could this relative unknown garner the votes, even granting Diebold electronic vote tampering?
Yes, yes. Are we raising Kaine, folks? Is that what's going on? I mean, already Obama put Ray Mabus in charge of the space war, and there is a prophecy by Nostradamus for the end of the world, for World War III. that when Mabus dies, the Antichrist will rise. So now we have Obama, which Barack Obama, if you took that, translated it from Hebrew, it would mean lightning from heaven, our very description of Lucifer in the Bible, or of Satan. And we have Cain being raised unknown to the public, and we now have a Mabus as well, ready to take a mortal head wound or something and bring about the Antichrist. We need to think these type of thoughts when we are looking at something as what seems, I can't even use the word innocuous, but as politics, as you and I, James, discussed in our last show, see that there is a religious aspect to this whole puzzle, and there is this overshadowing. I mean, Hillary, you know, I think would be burned as a witch back in the day, but there is this puzzle inside of this that we are dealing with maybe, you know, the age of revelations, or at least the attempt to fulfill the predictions spoken of in Revelations, because we see all these correlations coming out.
Yes, there's no question that we are headed into an era that the Bible talks about. Of course, I'm sure the vast majority of your listeners are familiar with the discussion in the Bible, in the book of Revelation, of a figure called the Beast or Antichrist, who rules over every nation, tribe, and language. And of course, to govern the world, you need a world government. And I raise that point to people when I talk to them about Council on Foreign Relations, UN, European Union, NAFTA, all this consolidation to rule the planet. You have to consolidate the planet. And we've been seeing this through a boil the frog approach, this gradual development of world government that he would need taking place. And of course, you know, it would be a police state. And of course, we've seen all these false flags that are intended, the terrorist false flags intended either to bring about wars that change the way the map looks, or to the false flags to disarm the citizenry, which you need to install your satanic police state. So we're certainly seeing a fulfillment. And of course, you also know that in the book of Revelation, it says that no one could buy or sell without the mark of the beast. And whereas 100 years ago, that would be hard to imagine, now we have things like the very chip and these implantable chip devices that are actually being sold as beneficial, because, you know, your mother with Alzheimer's, if she wanders off, they can track where she is with the chip. But of course, that means that if everybody gets chipped, they can track everybody. And if they actually use this ultimately to as a buy-sell device, because, you know, we swipe a credit card now, that's replacing cash, and then again, eventually you get a chip, and they've actually got people, they've got chips now that you can buy or sell with that are implantable. We're not that far away. I don't know that that's what the mark of the beast means, but we certainly see how technology is bringing about the possibility of some of these things happening that would not have been so easily envisioned before.
Oh, it's very bizarre for me to be at the grocery store and have the little old lady in front of me in line ask the cashier, "Do you take the chip?" Because they need to know whether to stick it or swipe it.
Right.
And it's just when I hear those words coming out of a little old lady's mouth, boy, and I've heard it mostly from little old ladies. I don't generally hear it. I guess other people are more aware of technology and just know to stick it or swipe it. But, you know, it is a very weird moment in time. Mm-hmm. I want to add a little bit to this as we discussed this situation, and I was talking about the meltdown of this current election. Now, folks, as James, and just so you folks know, James Perloff, his website is jamesperloff.com. To get all his updates, blogs, books, and everything, go to jamesperloff.com and check out his book reviews, articles, all the good stuff there. When I started looking into the 9/11 prediction, way back in 1998, somewhere around there, I started talking about there's going to be a major terrorist attack to occur to pass Homeland Security Bill, because Tom Ridge, the governor of Pennsylvania, was already assigned as the head of Homeland Security, but there was no Homeland Security. And every time this bill came forward, it would... it would fail miserably because it was the most unconstitutional thing everybody needed. So they needed a 9/11 for that to happen. The prediction was the middle of September to give you enough time to react to the story and then bring the bill back. And of course, at that moment, it passed with flying colors. We got Homeland Security. Tom Ridge's job was actually now an actual job. So as we're looking at the same puzzle, and it's gone through the birther, it's gone through W being forced into office, the birther movement, and all of the things that are collapsing the ideas of American democracy, now we're looking at this meltdown between Trump and Hillary. And I want to go ahead and put this on the record, James, since I don't often get a chance to do it, but I want the people to understand how these predictions unfold. And as we're looking at this meltdown of this election, the reasons that I expected this to occur was because there is a globalization takeover happening, as James is going to get deep into. And the puzzle pieces are constantly being put into place until they're needed. So Tom Ridge was head of a department that didn't exist. Well, now we have a council of governors. Now, if we go all the way back to early conspiracy theory and everyone that was talking about the New World Order in the 70s, they were discussing this UN takeover of America, the 10 regions that America would become in this globalization. So the Council on Governors was a legislative act that George W. Bush put forward, but it wasn't put officially established until Executive Order 13528, issued by Barack Obama on January 11th, 2010. And at this moment in 2010, they established a 10-person Council of Governors, which is a United States Council of State and Federal Officials established to advise the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of Homeland Security, and the White House Homeland Security Council on matters related to National Guard and civil support missions. So what has happened is Obama has now officially established this 10 regional governors across America. So we now need the meltdown to bring about this full completion of the globalization. Just like 9/11, now we need something to raise this Council of Governors up to their status as a global dictatorship through the UN. So I wanted to just lay that all out so you guys can go look it up for yourself, look into the Council of Governors, understand that this is a preliminary step to what people like James Perloff have been talking about since the 70s in the establishment of this New World Order. Anywhere you want to go with that, James?
Well, I wasn't aware of that order by Obama, but is the idea, is he trying to bring the governors on board because they're in charge of the state National Guards, and he wants to be able to deploy them in a militarized police state? Is that why he's working with the governors? Is that part of the scheme?
Well, that is the official reasoning for creating this Council of 10 Governors, was the idea that they would advise on, you know, civil support missions. Mm-hmm. Whereas, so now we can have this national defense inside of our borders in the idea of homeland security. So yes, it has everything to do with civil support, homeland defense, synchronization and integration of state and federal military activities inside the United States, and then things dealing with National Guard, Homeland Defense, and civil support. The point, though, is that for me, this seems to fit so well in exactly what everyone has been warning us about for all these decades, folks. You know, I remember hearing about this, what was it, Chuck Misler? You know, I don't know, back in the 70s when this stuff was being put on vinyl records, when you, that was the first podcast, folks. You know, you could go get Chuck Misler on vinyl. I have it, by the way, all about the Council on Foreign Relations. And this idea of this globalization, which is really what I wanted to get to, you can actually go to Wikipedia, folks, look at the Council of Governors, see, you know, who the 10 of them are. And then remember, when this happens, when the truth of the New World Order comes to be and we are established with 10 regional governors, as everyone is predicted, and because the paperwork's there, it's not even a prediction. We are simply following all the puzzle pieces. So it, for me, this is a preliminary step to the global government, as we're going to discuss.
Well, they have been trying to federalize the police. You might recall talking about 70s. Actually, back in the 60s, the John Birch Society had a slogan, which was support your local police. And they even made a movie with a similar title with James Garner. But the idea behind that slogan was that they didn't want the police to be nationalized. They didn't want consolidation of power, which would give you a KGB running the country. They wanted to keep the Andy Griffith local cop there. Now we see police with these hyper-militarized national reinforced uniforms and right around in much bigger vehicles than they used to. And it makes sense to me that part of the consolidation of law enforcement would include getting the governors on board, because sometimes governors will utilize the 10th Amendment, will react against the federal government. They probably want to have them on board with the program, so you get the federal army on board, you get the National Guard on board, and you get the local cops on board, all on one national security agenda. It would make sense to me that they would be taking steps like this.
Yeah, these 10 governors, folks, just so you know, are hand-selected by the president himself. Not, you know, you have no part in this, and they serve a 2-year term. So, yeah, you have no part in this, folks. This is something that is happening to you, and I believe it is a clear indication of the globalized steps that are coming. By the way, James, I was actually run out of Mayberry for juggling without a permit.
It was the real Mayberry.
It was the real Mayberry. I miss Andy Griffith so much. That idea of the helpful police officer, the idea that they're there to protect and serve. I miss this so much. I don't even know if I ever experienced it other than on television, because I grew up in the first police state, which was George H.W. Bush's first point of light in his 1,000 point of light system, was Orlando, Florida. And in honor of this established point of light, which was a police state, folks, I had cameras on my streets in 1985. When I came out and everybody was talking about it in the 90s or 2000, I'm like, oh my God, you know, how long have I dealt with this already? The motto in Florida was go to Florida on vacation, wind up on probation, get flown back on a violation. They just couldn't fit it on the license plates. So I grew up in this police state, and in honor of this 1,000 point of light, which some believe have hypothesized that this goes back to the Mothers of Darkness, which you know, David Icke has talked about, this witch's coven that lives in, you know, Europe somewhere, that they have 1,000 points of light in the top of their altar. And yet here George H.W. Bush comes forward, and forget, yeah, you know, don't forget, he's Skull and Bones, head of the CIA, witchcraft is in his heart, and he establishes Orlando as the first point of light in this 1,000 point of light system. And for this, they blow up City Hall, which you can watch in Lethal Weapon 3, and know that I was sitting right across the street when that building blows up. They don't say it's Orlando City Hall in the movie, but that's what it was. And I was there just to watch City Hall come down. But then they put a large penis or phallus and a vagina out in front of City Hall. And you can see this in my film, The Sorcerers of Atlantis. So my point here being that although things look political, they always have these religious overtones. These guys are playing a game that people aren't paying attention to, and it has to deal with the religious aspects. I mean, they are literally Antichrist.
Right. Their whole system is Luciferian, and it's interesting. You know, William Guy Carr wrote a book in 1955 called Pawns in the Game, And I personally still think that it's the best summary of the Illuminati that I've ever read. And I'm so amazed that through his intelligence contacts, he wasn't Canadian intelligence, he was able to put it together. He actually reported on the Bilderberg meeting of 1957 in his subsequent book, which is called Red Fog in America. He was already up to speed on the Bilderbergers in 1950s, in the 1950s. And now that's being ahead of your time, kind of like you. You know, he was ahead of his time. He talked about the fact that these people are Satan worshippers in the 50s. And it's interesting, if you've seen some of the interviews with Ted Gunderson, who the late Ted Gunderson was in the FBI, and he was his highest position, he was the special agent in charge of the Los Angeles branch of the FBI with 700 personnel under him. So he's got credibility. And he specifically corroborated William Guy Carr by name and said that the elite are worshippers of Lucifer. So it is very true that we cannot understand these things just in terms of these people are after money and power. There's actually an evil spiritual dimension to it. I mean, there's no money to be made by spraying people with chemtrails. I mean, we're talking about that's pure evil in people's hearts.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And again, for me, the chemtrail issue actually speaks to globalization. Because, folks, I truly believe that if there were American pilots flying chemtrails knowingly over our skies, that we would hear about it. Someone would come forward, probably more than one. So to me, the chemtrails in America began right about the same time they announced that NATO could now fly over our skies. And folks, NATO is an international globalist military complex and the first foreign forces to be given clear license to patrol our airways. So I kind of vote the idea that these chemtrail planes are NATO. That's just my own little theory. I'm just throwing it out there for you folks. But I just really do believe that if there was a chemtrail American pilot out there, that he, you know, they would be coming forward. I have that much faith in humanity.
Well, I think you're making an excellent point. And it's been said that in the New World Order, they would recruit foreigners to run the camps because an American would be more likely to be sympathetic, but a foreigner towards an American could be much more likely to be dependent upon, to be cruel. And so what you're saying about the chemtrails makes sense. In fact, where I live, you know, we've got, for the last 2 years, we've constantly had airplanes in the sky. I'm not just talking about chemtrail planes, but it's pretty hard to step outside my house and there's not an airplane in the sky. There's no exaggeration. It's at night, too. And it's been increasing. There's this tremendous air pressure. They're not all laying chemtrails, for sure. Some of these are small craft, but you just see them constantly. I'm talking about eastern Massachusetts.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gotten crazy out there, without a doubt. The complexity of life is just coming in at full speed. It's like a locomotive heading for us, folks. And I just, it's a difficult place to be, James, because we end up in the middle of things, especially when you're talking about social engineering, because you know that they're creating both sides. And so when you're trying to come forward with ideas of conspiracy theory and trying to bring things forward, you always have to be so careful that you're not just picking up on the other side of the thread. So recently, I saw Hillary Clinton mentioning Alex Jones. I mean, to me, this was like a huge red flag, because part of my prediction for 9/11 was don't be an Alex Jones. I didn't know of Alex Jones when I made the prediction, but that was basically what I was saying, was if we go off on the other side, on the other edge of this cliff, and start running down that way, then you're going to end up in the same nightmare. You're just fueling the fire with your hate and anger. And really, what needs to occur more in this situation is the coming together, the community, and everything's there to divide us. So, you know, let's get to community a little bit and the ideas of how it's being destroyed, really. No one can get along with anyone these days, don't you think?
They should be, and they're certainly trying to drive us apart. It's interesting. I was talking about William Guy Carr. In his books he wrote in the 50s, he was talking about the attempts to racially divide America back then. And on one of his trips to the South, he spoke both to blacks and to whites to let them know about this strategy and that they needed to stick together. And this is true. The liberal conservative divide, the Republican Democrat divide, and the men against women divide, the racial divide, the class divide. They're always trying to divide and conquer us. And of course, this racial strife we see in America right now, where they're playing both sides against each other. You probably noticed that they will pick up on a white officer shooting an unarmed black man. And I remember when the Ferguson riots were exploding, there was the number one headline in on American Online while that was happening was that in Arizona, a white cop had just shot an unarmed black man. I said, "Why are you pouring gasoline on the fire?" That's what they were doing. They're trying to make it worse. But then they'll do the other route. You have the Dallas incident where allegedly there was this guy shooting Dallas cops, and now all of a sudden they're saying, "Look what those guys are doing to you." And they go back and forth. Look what the police are doing to you. Look what these protesters are doing to you. And they keep fanning the flames, and you're right, we need to be at peace with each other, because otherwise, whichever side you take, whether it's anti-rioter or anti-police, if we get into a hate mode, then we are playing into their hands.
We saw a great example at the church in South Carolina, and the shooter had gone in there, sat down with the congregation, debated whether or not he really wanted to shoot these nice people. Fired the shots, and then instead of a riot, as I believe the New World Order wanted, everybody came together and they even forgave the shooter. They had candle vigils. Now, on the opposite side of this puzzle, and this was all about the same time that they did the what I call a Rosa Parks scenario of this lady pulling down the Southern flag, the Confederate flag, and making that all of a sudden a symbol of racism. When honestly, folks, the Confederate flag was a symbol of state sovereignty. So realize what they were actually destroying. So they have to have this symbolic gesture like Rosa Parks. She wasn't the first black lady to sit in the front of a bus, but she was made into the icon of it because it was publicly staged event to have, this put into the public arena. Now, this last, discounting the shooting that went on today or yesterday, the last shooting that I was looking into was actually a black officer who shot a black kid, and yet the riots were black people saying, "Kill Whitey." And I couldn't understand this one at all. The way that this is erupting is so. I mean, I just keep wondering how we're ever going to get together when everybody keeps falling for these pitfalls.
It's difficult because the media, which so many people watch, is pushing the narrative. And plus, you've got George Soros funding these people flying into places like Ferguson and Baltimore, who are actually paid to riot. And when a guy's being paid to riot, he's not somebody you can reason with. So we'll have to confine our reasoning to our people who are not part of that program or part of that agenda, but are simply honestly getting caught up in the hype.
This is absolutely true, folks. I have witnessed this time and time again when the Seattle WTO protest erupted into the chaos that should have been our generation's Kent State, well, mostly no one noticed. But those that were paying attention, like myself, through indie media, saw that they had staged this entire scenario. You saw these kids kicking in storefront glass panes and doing all this destruction, and there's a lady following them with a camera, making sure this is all seen by the public. Yet the parts where she's saying, "Where are the police in all of this?" was cut out in the reports. But where the police were was opening fire with pepper spray, rubber bullets, and bean bags on the unsuspecting, innocent protesters protesters saying, I don't want an international monetary fund. I don't want an international or a World Trade Organization. And they just opened fire on these people. Children were losing teeth, eyes. It was chaos ensues. But it was all started, according to the media, as they put it forward, because these kids had gone and done this damage, which wasn't even on the street of the protest. Now, on another layer of that, I went to the WTO protest following this one in Washington, D.C., and I gathered with 500,000 people, and I partied in the streets with them. There was no anger. There was no violence. Everybody was happy and having a good time. And you know, for me, that's all a protest really is, because I don't believe it's going to do anything, especially if everybody just goes home at the end of the weekend. You know, what good is that? You've come and made your point. But what happens is, as I traveled up the East Coast, I checked every newspaper, and every newspaper showed an image of violence at this WTO protest, which there was none. I don't even know how they got the image, because I was all over this place. No violence, complete just bliss, really. Everybody was happy. And you see that they just project this out to the public, and then we, the protesters, become the enemy, right?
Yeah, they're script writing these events. It doesn't matter what really happens. What matters in the public's eye, unfortunately, is often what they're being told on by the news commentator who's reading from a teleprompter, which is a politically motivated scenario. Everything is wag the dog these days. Everything is most everything. It seems that advances their agenda is pre-scripted because they know that if it's not scripted, it can get out of control. They don't want that. They want a precise unfolding of events. And what better way to do that than have it be like a movie where you write the entire script in three acts or however many, and you know what the ending is before the event actually occurs.
And when we get back, we will be discussing Hillary's death, right? Or when the British lady was standing on camera on 9/11 saying, right. Yes, and we're just getting reports that Building 7 has fallen, and it was still standing behind her.
Yeah, that was a classic example of events being script written. And of course, as time went on, we realized just how much CNN and the other networks were also on board that day. I mean, how long did it take them to say that Osama bin Laden had done it and that jet fuel had melted the beams and so forth, everything that the government would eventually come out in its own official analysis.
Insane, folks. Insane. So Zionism. It seems that this is the true power behind the power. Do you want to? We're definitely getting towards the close of this episode, so I know I really wanted to push more of Truth is a Lonely Warrior, folks. Definitely check this book out, because we all know that's the truth, and because you know we're all standing out here feeling very alone, and we need to find ourselves. We need to find each other and start to open our mouths. And I swear to you, folks, if you realize around you how many people actually are thinking these thoughts, if you just open your mouth, you'll find out that they're right there next to you. Some of them may look at you like you're green, because truth is a lonely warrior, and nobody wants to hear that they're wrong, and no one wants to believe that all their life efforts have been put to shame because the world is not at all what they think it is. But we have to unmask these forces behind the global destruction. And unveil these shadows of power. So let's pimp your books a little bit, James, and get into the ideas that are covered here.
Well, thanks for that was very well done, the way you actually worked the titles of my book into what your conversation was. My latest book is Truth is Lonely Warrior. It's actually a primer, and it's designed to give people the full picture, because my experience has been that if you only show people one thing like 9/11, their reaction would be, well, our own government would never do that to us. They need to know that our own government has done that to us through many false flags, and also that the government is not the voice of the people, that's run from behind the scenes. Really, and they'll say, well, why didn't the TV tell us about it then? And you say, well, you have to understand that the TV is controlled. So this book is a fairly comprehensive. It starts with false flags that brought us into war. It goes into the Council on Foreign Relations. It talks about the Fed ruining our economy. And it's got a chapter on media control and a full chapter on 9/11. It's got a chapter on the arts and a chapter on how they've even worked against the Christian faith in an effort to ecumenicize. You know, they want a one-world religion along with a one-world government. And it's got chapters on population control, vaccines, etc. Try to give people the full jigsaw puzzle, because with only one piece, it's hard to imagine what the puzzle amounts to in its totality. So it's a primer that you can give to people. Truth is a Lonely Warrior, that's the book. But you want to talk a little about Zionism. I do have a chapter on Zionism there. And there's no question that at the top of the power pyramid, I kind of envisioned this way. I sort of see Satan at the top of it, and free the upper levels, the Palladium Rite, the not the lower level Freemasons, but the illuminated Luciferian Freemasons with their blood loyalty oaths and their positions of power and their oaths of secrecy and obedience are major players in this world order, and along with their interrelated secret societies like the Skull and Bones. But Zionism is hugely powerful. Of course, the Rothschilds are the foremost banking family in the world. And of course, they were generating, buying up land in Palestine. Now we find out as no later than 1829. I should just mention something, a couple of preamble types remarks. Number one, I'm half Jewish myself, so although many people will try to say you're anti-Semitic if you criticize Zionism or Israel, I am half Jewish, and I'm certainly against racism of any shape or form. But the other thing is to understand why Zionism. You know, we understand about world government, they want a world dictatorship. Well, they also want a center of this world government. Every government has a capital. You know, we have the capital of the United States in Washington. Well, the capital of the world government is going to be in Jerusalem, because Jerusalem is considered the world's holiest city by Muslims and Christians and Jews alike. And this is where Satan wants to thumb his nose at God from. In fact, you know, the Bible actually predicts this. 2 Thessalonians 2 says, don't let anyone deceive you in any way, for that day, it's talking about the final days, will not come until the rebellion occurs and the man of lawlessness, talking about the beast or antichrist, is revealed, the man doomed to destruction. He will oppose and exalt himself over everything that is called God and or is worshipped, so that he sets himself up in God's temple, proclaiming himself to be God. Quote from the Bible. So in the temple, this is why they're this is why the Zionists seized Jerusalem in 1967. It'll be the 50th anniversary next year. And this is why they've been milking Christian congregations for money to rebuild Solomon's temple. A lot of Christians have been deceived into thinking that Jesus is going to come back for a 1,000-year reign. No, the Bible tells you very plainly it's going to be abomination of desolation. It's going to be the Antichrist who reigns from the temple. That'll be the capital for this world government. And the Zionists considered very important, and you can be sure that this is a major factor. The Middle Eastern wars, the Arab Spring, the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, it's not just about money and power and oil. It's about clearing the way for what Herzl and the Rothschild call Greater Israel. We're doing this on the behalf of the Zionists. Zionism, of course, was the movement to establish the State of Israel, the return of the Jews. And of course, many will tell you, I know you work with Tex Mars. He's got a book out, DNA and the Jewish Bloodline, and he's not the first. You go back to Arthur Koestler with his book, The 13th Tribe. Whether you're looking at the historical evidence or the DNA evidence, there's quite a bit to show that the people who took over Israel, as they call it, in 1948, were not the descendants of Abraham or his seed, but actually were descended from the Khazars. And even in Wikipedia, we'll tell you that the Khazarian kingdom, which is situated long ago above the Black and Caspian Seas, converted to Judaism as a state religion. They became the Yiddish-speaking Ashkenazi Jews of the world. At least some people dispute that, even within alt media, but a strong case could be that they had no authority, biblical authority, even you have to twist the Bible to say that they had authority today to take it over. The point being, to sum up a lot of words here, is that to the Rothschilds, taking over Israel and the Zionist movement was extremely important. And you'll find that the Zionist power brokers at the apex of everything, we're talking about 9/11 with the dancing Israelis and Larry Silverstein and Israeli-owned firms running security at all the airports that day, and Odigo with its messaging service telling Israelis not to be in there that day. So many Israeli connections to 9/11. But if you look at Hollywood, let me see, just take me a second here. Look at all the Hollywood studios. Universal was founded by Carl Lemmel, who was Jewish. The Warner Brothers were Jewish. Fox Film Corporation was founded by William Fox, was Jewish. And then 20th Century was founded by Joseph Schenck and Daryl Zanuck, who are both Jewish, and they combined that in the 20th Century Fox. If you look at MGM, it's Marcus Lowe, Sam Goldwyn, and Louis B. Mayer, all Jewish. Columbia Pictures with Harry Kahn, Jewish. Paramount Pictures came from Sam Goldwyn, Adolph Zukor, and Jason Zaglavsky, all Jewish. So this is not to say be anti-Jewish. Not all Jews are a part of this. For sure, my father was Jewish. I never heard him talk about Israel once in his life. He's a totally Americanized Jew. But amongst the organized Talmudic Jews who have a hatred for the non-Jew, and you can find a lot of evidence for that, an attitude of their chosenness reaches a point of racial supremacy. But there, look at the heads of the Federal Reserve. We have Janet Yellen. Before her, Bernanke, before him, Greenspan, all Jewish. Look at the Bolshevik Revolution, funded by the Rothschilds and Kuhn Loeb, Trotsky, all Jewish, you know. So this is not to raise hatred towards Jews, because again, there are many people, many Jews who oppose the oppression of the Palestinians, but you can be sure that the Zionists have played an enormous hand in all of this. And if you want to get a good idea of their game plan, I have a chapter in my book, Read the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. You know, I thought it was a hoax because everybody in mainstream media said so, but the problem is the Zionists own the media. So you have to read the book on your own, and you'll find that it includes everything from vaccination to overriding the Constitution with executive orders and distracting the people with sports. This is published in 1903. The whole plan was predicted back then. It's an eye-opener if you read that. So I'm sorry to go on such a long talk. It's kind of hard to sum up in a sentence or two. But Zionism is really, humanly speaking, very much at the apex of the power pyramid, with the Rothschild banking family providing, some people say they're worth many trillions of dollars.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're hitting the nail on the head, and we need to see that. We can add more to this puzzle, because there actually is a special room at the Grand Lodge of New York Freemasonry that is dedicated to these very people that James Perloff has mentioned in the Hollywood Jewish scheme. They are also all Freemasons. Realize that. Realize that when you walk in a Mason temple, first thing you'll see is the Star of David. This is very normal. It's all part of the same puzzle, because they practice Hebrew mysticism inside of Freemasonic lodges.
Right.
So it fits perfectly in with the Zionist agenda. And so all of those, you can actually see pictures of me in that Hollywood Freemason room for them with Dan Fogler. So if you're going through the photography section there on freemantv.com, definitely check out all the Mason temples that I've been to, and you'll see the ones with me and Fogler. The red one where we're looking is also the same place where Roosevelt's leg brace had broken the altar. And, you know, that's because your world leaders, folks, are kneeling at an altar to three holy books, the Quran, the Torah, and the Bible. And it is a place where the name Jesus Christ is disallowed. You cannot say those words inside of there.
That's right.
So that's who's in charge. And once you start to get this puzzle together, it grows and it grows. I want to add a little more to your story here as well, James, and the idea that there is, folks, a congress of leaders of world and traditional religions And this is in Astana in Kazakhstan. Now, the name Astana means threshold. And the threshold that you have to go through in order to enter Astana, which is the most sophisticated city ever created on this planet at this time, is in Astana, Kazakhstan, folks. All right? They're the ones launching to the International Space Station. They're the ones not blowing up on the launch pad like SpaceX. And I know I didn't mention last time the weird drone that flew past the SpaceX rocket as it exploded. So let's just get that one out there, too. You can look into that. But, you know, that was before they launched the OSIRIS-REx, right? So anyway, which means King Osiris. Let's get to this. The Congress of Leaders of World and Traditional Religions outside of Kazakhstan in Astana. As you walk into Astana, you must walk through this giant glass pyramid. And they say this is the Palace of Peace and Accord. And it's the four sides of the palace are oriented to the four sides of the worlds, and all the religions are gathered here for their congress. And this happens every year. And I'll tell you, most of the time it's Muslim. And this Congress of World Leaders meets inside of this giant glass pyramid in Astana, where they gather around a giant sundial table and set the organization for our current religious outcome. Folks, this is all real. Go check it out. Astana. I have a video called 21st Century Capitals, and you would want to see this to see the different cities that are being established. As James is telling us, the ideas inside of Jerusalem, without a doubt, we're going to see something, right, James? Something that does with the third temple. We're going to see the fall of this and the rise of that, because that all boils into the same story. Have you, as we just wind this up real quick, do you have anything on the Temple Mount?
Well, I know that there's been a plot there, and as I understand it, they're not correct when they say that the Temple Mount is where they're planning to build this new temple. It's not where Solomon Temple really was, but that's actually deception. They want to they're claiming it's buried underneath the mosque that's there, but that's actually not true. But of course, tearing down that mosque, which set off a world war, and because you, I'm sure you know about Albert Pike's prediction of a war between the Muslims and the Zionists, and drawing the whole world into it. But by the way, not only for my sake, but for the audience, can you spell Astana? This is new to me.
Absolutely, it is A-S-T-A-N-A.
Okay, I was guessing that, but I wanted to be sure.
Sure.
I learned a lot from you, and you know, I have to confess that I've put certainly a preponderance of evidence into the, you know, the geopolitical side of events. But as a Christian, I'm increasingly aware that there is this spiritual dimension. And off air, you're telling me some things I'd never known before about some of the terminology and numerology in these events. And this would have significance to a person in a secret society who knows what they mean. Mm-hmm. Like you were talking about the significance of 9/11. I would not have known that. But you've done research, and you've done a lot of pioneering research, clearly, into the significance of the occult spiritual dimension to these things, that it remains hidden from the public. And I do think in alt media we need to have a much higher awareness of these things. And you've obviously succeeded where others haven't in predicting some of these things in advance, just from knowing significance of the names and the numerology. And so you're actually a step ahead of most of us on this.
I'll tell you,
but it does all tie together, the geopolitical and the monetary and the violent and the occult and the numerology. They all do tie together. They're all part of a overarching framework. But we should not omit any major part of that. Certainly in our getting our understanding of these events correctly.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for that. It no one's more surprised when my predictions come true than myself. You know, it's a science that I've been working on, and I can't believe it when everything happens. So, I really do think, as we're saying here, that this whole situation's gonna just fall in on itself. Who knows if Trump Trump's legal investigation into his foundation is going to bring him down. Hillary's already in the midst of this same crisis. Will she die for real? Will ABC's prophecy become true? Will this whole thing fall apart and we raise Cain? We don't know, but we know that there are all these different puzzle pieces that are leading us to understand what could happen. And when it does happen, then it's our reactions and our finding each other in a sense of peace and accord and trying to suss this situation out and realize that there is an overlord that is manipulating everything. And James Perloff does a fantastic job of laying out the ground for this whole to understand the puzzle and build the pyramid and see who they are. And for you members, I'm going to follow this show up with a history of the Khazarian Jews with Galen Ross, a remastered episode that's never been played as a podcast and never been aired before through this stream. And it is a lovely old man who I hope is still kicking around out there. But boy, this Galen Ross was in years advanced when he did the show. So bless him for doing all this hard work. I'm going to get that show out there for you members. So guys, if you haven't subscribed yet, you really would enjoy this. I promise you that. Check it out free for a week. Just come over, hit subscribe, sign up, check it out, and you know, cancel if you don't like what you're getting. And I promise you that we have so much more coming your way, that the new hosts are chiming in with new shows, and they're just kind of bonus shows that I'm going to give to you until we really start to form this thing into a hard-working network, if that happens. You know, I never know. I don't want to jump too far ahead of my own cart, but I'm really trying to make this an instrument of learning for all of us and a real place to find peace and accord. And James, I want to thank you for being a big piece of that puzzle.
Well, thanks. Certainly I've been, I guess it was since 1978 when I read Gary Allen's None Dare Call a Conspiracy, sort of launched me into investigating the truth. So I guess that's what, 38 years now. And of course, there was no internet back then. There was only library research that could be done. But with the opening up of the internet, things have really accelerated for me over the last decade into reaching out. And well, I guess without that, you and I wouldn't have contacted each other. By the way, if you ever decide to make a fortune on these predictions of yours and you're out in Vegas, put down a couple bets for me, will you?
Okay. I'll see if this will work out with some sort of lottery prediction or something. So far, my luck doesn't go that way. yeah, you know, the truth is, James, that you bring this up, this made me laugh. If I had realized the reaction of the public from 9/11, I would have made $1 million because I would have invested so heavily in American flag bumper stickers. Oh,
sure.
Okay.
There were people, who really could make the prediction with the conference were the ones who predicted. And of course, now you're talking about the shorting of airline stocks and other little financial maneuvers.
I guess emptying out those thoughts
the
too.
Bank of Nova Scotia, as I understand, was emptied out below the World Trade Center on the morning of 9/11. But
yeah, that whole plot was in the movie Die Hard. So if you guys are, I think it was Die Hard 2, if you want to see the exact plot, the scenario is exact. Even the dump trucks, Cheney's dump trucks, going into the subterranean tunnels there, that was all in Die Hard 2, you know, 10 years before it actually happened, just like the lone gunman had the exact scenario of 9/11 before it happened. So was the taking of the gold, was also in a movie before it happened. So.
Yeah, there's so many. It's clear that the people who do these events do drop hints about them. And Nemo's passport in the Matrix expires on September 11th, 2001, and the movie was made in 1999. I mean, we could go on and on forever, but
yep.
It's clear that there are people in Hollywood who are on board with this stuff, and they sort of snickeringly drop little telltale hints. Little clues for us to find. Not that they're significant, but it does actually corroborate the fact that these things are not unfolding by happenstance or the way the media tells us, but they are indeed planned in advance by the powers that be that have controlling both the media, the banks, and the government.
Never truer words spoke. Thank you, James Perloff, for coming here, and thank you all so much for tuning in. And we're going to stay in front of this eight ball and keep trying to give you the puzzle as we see it. And we will watch, and this will help us in our reaction in this Hegelian dialectic we live in. So I look forward to meeting every single one of you, and I know it happens eventually. So feel free to write me, freeman@freemantv.com, and let's connect. Don't forget about the friendshipagenda.com. It's a great place to meet like-minded people, although I think it's kind of empty at this time. But maybe we can revamp it. It's there for you. It's our own personal social network that if you want to be a part, be a part. And if, right now it's kind of like a party that you can't get everybody into the same room at the same time. So who knows? But it's there for you to use, you know. So there you have it. friendshipagenda.com. Get over to freemantv.com. Subscribe or don't. Go over and just check out my lectures. Check out the thousands of shows on the website, the artworks, the pictures, the articles. It's endless there. You could spend years, because I have spent years building it. Almost 12 years old now. So guys, check out freemantv.com. And get over to jamesperloff.com and get a hold of his books to help share this information with your friends, because we need the words to make this all known. And that's where it all starts, and you'll be amazed where it all goes. And members, stay tuned. Galen Ross coming up, first time revamped history of the Khazarian Jews. Just seemed like a perfect follow-up to this show. So I hope you all enjoy it. We'll see you next week.